This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. After 17 years, Sam Williams is retiring as president of the Metro Atlanta Chamber. In part two of our conversation in his downtown office, I asked Williams about the chamber's controversial role in the investigation of the 2009 Atlanta Public Schools test cheating scandal. It's hard to talk about the chamber without talking about the controversy surrounding the cheating scandal in the Atlanta Public Schools. Back in 2010, the Blue Ribbon Task Force was put together. You had a big hand in that. And yet the governor said its findings were inadequate, Governor Perdue at that time. Was that whole process a misstep by the chamber?
Well, the chamber didn't put the Blue Ribbon Commission together. That was appointed by the Atlanta School Board. We supported, from a staff point of view, the staff work on it. The Blue Ribbon Commission did not have investigative powers. They didn't have GBI agents. They couldn't offer immunity for people to testify. But even with those restrictions, they found over 100 people that they turned back into the school system and said, these need to be thoroughly investigated. I think they did the best they could with the tools they had. I think that the exposure of all of this by the AJC and then the investigation from a legal point of view with the powers of subpoena, et cetera, showed the depth of that cheating scandal. And I think the business community, we were as surprised as everybody else was in this process. We had no X-ray vision to see what cheating was being done or was not. And I think we're now seeing other cities across the nation that are grappling with this problem just as we grappled with it. Unfortunately, the magnitude of it here, I think, shocked all of us.
You said the Blue Ribbon Commission was appointed by the school board, but in a memo on February 26th of 2010, you basically outlined in advance who the members of that commission would be even before the board requested that that commission be put together. So what would you say to somebody who says, well, you are a lot more involved than just saying, okay, the board did this?
Well, the board picked who they wanted. The board told us what they were going to do in the process, how they were going to go about all of that review, and that's what we shared with the leadership of the chamber, is what the board told us, the staff of the Blue Ribbon Commission. And that staff was not the chamber. That staff was the Atlanta Education Fund.
Which has chamber ties, though.
Well, we have no staff working with them. The only coincidence is certain business people were members of one and are members of the other.
One of the critiques, though, has been that whatever reservations you and Gary Price and others, Gary Price was the head of the Blue Ribbon Commission, had about the methodology that was used by the auditors or about Dr. Hall, were not brought out to the public at the time the Blue Ribbon Commission report came out, that there was an effort to basically sell it as, okay, we have a problem, but it's limited in scope.
Well, I think the entire process of the Blue Ribbon Commission was volunteer citizens trying to do the best they could do with the limitation of resources that they had. I think they voiced concerns about the degree of thoroughness because they didn't have those legal powers. They were looking at information that was voluntarily given to them by the school system. They couldn't dig into it and put people under oath. I think you also have to look at the atmosphere that existed at the time. The superintendent at that time was named Superintendent of the Year across America. That's a pretty high recognition. The U.S. Secretary of Education came to Atlanta at that time and praised the Atlanta school system as well. I think those are things which would give normal people a hesitancy, or rather a benefit of the doubt, of saying, that seems contradictory to what we're hearing. Let's hear more, rather than jump to a conclusion at that time. And I think, if anything, the business community in retrospect probably should have been much more scrutinizing of what was going on. But given the national and other attention, benefit of the doubt was the way to go.
But the chamber is full of smart people who were very invested in Dr. Hall, yet nobody seemed to notice the red flags of the scores that just went up probably far more than it was possible for them to go up. Did you miss something there?
Well, I think what we missed is we didn't have the resources to investigate it. And I think we also missed the fact that the school system had people engaged in the investigation that the business community didn't even know about at the time. So I think that in retrospect, sure, we'd like to redo some things in that whole process. I think that Georgia law, unfortunately, does not allow for any kind of investigation unless a governor appoints it. So all the school systems in Georgia have the responsibility of investigating themselves. And I think we've learned from Enron and other lessons that organizations shouldn't be investigating themselves. But until Georgia law changes, every school system is left to be on its honor in reporting these kinds of things.
Beverly Hall claimed in an interview with me back in 2010 that only 12 schools were found to have had systemic problems. Did you know that it was much wider than that at the time?
I don't recall what date that was. I was not a member of the Blue Ribbon Commission, and I ever even went to a meeting of the Blue Ribbon Commission.
Because in that February 26 memo, you referred to the investigation that would guide us, I think, as you put it, in our support of Dr. Hall. Were you too invested in Beverly Hall?
No, what I was saying is that we'll let the report tell us whether we're going to continue to support Dr. Hall or not support Dr. Hall. Let's let the facts tell us rather than jumping to any kind of conclusion.
The thought has been out there that the chamber was perhaps aware that there was a problem, but trying to say, okay, let's solve this, but try to do it as quietly as possible. In other words, keep down the damage done to Atlanta's image. And the implication from some of the critics has been that this was at the expense of doing a thorough investigation into a problem that really cheated children. Is that a fair criticism?
No, I don't think it's a fair criticism at all. I think that the chamber has long supported the quality of public education for children. Children in this state have to be educated to get access to the jobs that we see in the future. I don't think that any business executive would say, well, let's tolerate children that don't get educated for the sake of a brand or something else. I think that's just not fair at all of what the business community in this city thinks. I think we all know that education across Georgia is a real challenge, that getting kids out of high school when you have a graduation rate that's somewhere in the range of 65% to 70%, and then the kids that do go on to technical college or four-year college, we've just got to increase the rate of those young people, or otherwise what we're going to be doing is continuing to depend on workforce that moves here from somewhere else. And we don't want to do that. That on the long term is not a sustainable model. We have to have better high schools, and I think we've got a great college system and technical college system, but our elementary and high schools have got to rise up to the standards of our colleges.
Does that mean the chamber would support the charter school movement, for instance, or is there a feeling that charter schools spread the money around too thinly among yet another set of public schools?
Well, I think that's something we're going to see the result of after the referendum that allowed charter schools to be formed much more easily in the future than they have been in the past. I think the jury's out on that, how that's going to work. I think there are some good charter schools, there are some good public schools, and I think the competition between the two perhaps is going to improve them both.
In the relationship between business and politics, as the head of a chamber, you certainly want to attract more business here. You want to make sure that there are reasons for business to come here. You just mentioned an educated workforce. Tax incentives have been debated up and down because a lot of folks think, well, this is a reason for businesses to come here and they create jobs. But there have lately been questions about whether all the businesses who come here and get these tax breaks create all the jobs that they say they're going to, and that then the tax burden shifts to other people. Do we need to take a look at our whole incentive structure?
Our experience is that tax incentives are important, but they're not the driver. The number one driver for any company looking to move to Atlanta is, can I hire the highly educated, multicultural workforce? That's number one. Number two is access to Hartsfield-Jackson Airport. Number three is the cost of living. And number four is the quality of life. Now, when you get your fourth and fifth down the rung, I think then what we're finding is that some companies and some consultants who help those companies move promote competition between states and between cities. And it's hard to say as a governor or a mayor if Pulte Homes wants to move here and but for this incentive we're going to get them or not. I think if we could get everybody to say none of us are going to give incentives, that's great. But that's not the way the marketplace works. And I think that our public leaders have been judicious. We really don't have a lot of money to throw around to relocate companies. Texas has over $500 million a year that Governor Perry uses very aggressively. Ours is a fraction of that amount of money. There is, in Georgia law, though, a clawback program, they call it, that if a company doesn't do what it says it's going to do in hiring people, then the company has to give that money back to the state.
Is that being enforced, though, and is the state doing enough, do you think?
I think it's being enforced, and I think it's also a prevention up front to let a company know, don't misrepresent something to us, because, you know, our revenue commissioner or our attorney general or other officials at the state are going to look into it.
Looking back on 17 years, anything that you think I did it absolutely right, and anything you look at and say would have done that differently?
Well, I think the best thing is not just me, but it's our leadership and the professional staff here, is that we decided, instead of what I'd call shotgun marketing to try to get any company to move here, we really split it into subsectors to say, within technology, let's go after wireless mobility, or let's go after cybersecurity, or in the health area, let's go after healthcare IT or biomedical devices, taking the supply chain industry and splicing it into advanced manufacturing. Those are very smart decisions because they built on the strengths of things that were already happening here in Atlanta. The electronic payment systems that were in place here, those are all really growing. And I think those have really paid off. In the 17 years I've been here, we've added more than 75,000 jobs with our partners. I think the most important thing to me, and the reason why I think this is a good time to look at retirement, is that last year we spent almost all year looking at the idea of what are things that Metro Atlanta could do to be much more successful than it is today. Boston Consulting Group came in. A group was led by Carol Tomei, the Home Depot CFO. And many of the ideas that came out of that study we put together in a business plan. One of the fundamental ones, create a big partnership between the universities and the business community. We now have 7 universities and 9 CEOs, presidents of those, working as teams together to bring forth startups, research and development, partner venture capital with new ideas. That's an idea that's happening now. Another idea is, instead of just recruiting companies to move here, work on growing companies that are already here. Look at telling our story better across the nation, that we are truly a college town. We have 57 universities, 250,000 students. We really rival Washington, New York, Boston, Chicago, and San Francisco in terms of being a college town, but we don't tell people that. That whole campaign we put forth in a business plan, and the business and foundation communities have funded it to the tune of $28 million over the next 5 years. That's where our roadmap is for the future in terms of economic job growth and attracting the millennials, the millennial workforce. And that's why I think that now that is a great plan. It's funded. We've got professionals. We've got great CEOs to lead it. So I feel comfortable saying, okay, I'm 68. I've extended my contract once already from 65. I don't want to be here when I'm 70. This is a good time to say, fantastic, great group. Wish you well in the future.
Anything you do differently?
Well, I wish we could replay the T-Splice, but, you know, when you're starting a race 5 years ahead of time and you know that you got to finish it, it's hard to say halfway through, let's call time out, reset the clock, and do it for 2 or 3 years later. I think the timing on that was very hurtful to the outcome, but I think we've learned a lot of lessons. And I think the other thing is that transportation is now at the front of mind when we're listening to your program as we're stuck in traffic every day. And as I think that people are now saying, well, you know, what are some other ways to skin this cat? If we didn't like the idea of a penny sales tax, what are some other things that we're willing to pay for? Are we willing to look at privatizing parts of MARTA in order for the suburban counties to have access to public transportation? I think the necessity is driving people to think of different solutions.
But what do you say then to Fulton and DeKalb County taxpayers who've been paying into that system for so many years and been told, oh, no, we don't want your system, by the suburbanites?
Well, I think the suburbanites are going to have to pay to extend the system. I think that's true with almost any kind of infrastructure or business that people join after the company has been founded. I think that we're going to see the need for access to Hartsfield-Jackson explode in the next decade or two. If we continue to add 1 million people a decade to this region, we're going to have to find solutions. And I think the pressure of that growth is going to make people think more and more about, well, I didn't like that solution, so let's come up with some that are more tolerable.
During the campaign of the T-Splast, you kept, at least personally, a lower profile than you had in some other issues that I've covered with you over the years. Do you think that the controversy the year or two before surrounding the cheating scandal and what role the chamber had in the investigation of it hurt the chamber's ability to be effective in promoting the T-Splast?
No, not at all. The T-Splast was something that was promoted by 10 counties in the region, by the chairman of 10 county commissions, by a mayor from each county, by the governor, by the mayor of Atlanta. I don't think the business community was by itself out front helping to pass this. It was one among many people who were doing that. I think those dots just have no connection at all.
I was just saying, was it a factor among many?
No, I don't think so at all.
Sam Williams is retiring as president and CEO of the Metro Atlanta Chamber. Thanks so much for giving us this much time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dennis.